Escucha el noticiero cada día de lunes a viernes en Pueblos Sin Fronteras, wordpress.com.
El próximo 22 de noviembre se disputan la presidencia de Argentina el candidato del Frente para la Victoria, Daniel Scioli, y el derechista Mauricio Macri del partido Cambiemos. Si llegara la derecha al poder, Argentina dejaría a un lado los planes de integración latinoamericana y habría un nuevo acercamiento con las fuerzas conservadoras.
La integración latinoamericana fue uno de los ejes centrales de la política exterior para la Argentina en los últimos 12 años. El plan estratégico de la derecha nacional es todo lo contrario.
En caso de producirse una derrota del candidato oficialista Daniel Scioli y el triunfo por consiguiente de Mauricio Macri, habría una reversión muy significativa en la política exterior argentina. Para ponerlo en términos que toda la teleaudiencia entiende muy fácilmente, Macri es el gran aliado de Álvaro Uribe en la Argentina.
El mensaje que dio Mauricio Macri durante la gira realizada meses atrás por Alemania y Bélgica es que Argentina no debe ser parte de lo que dentro de su espacio llaman el eje bolivariano y debe, por consiguiente, reinsertarse a lo que denominan el mundo.
Eso significa que la Argentina va a congelar las relaciones con los países bolivarianos, Venezuela, Bolivia, Ecuador, Cuba mismo. Va a retirarse de la UNASUR, o por lo menos tener un perfil muy bajo, ninguna importancia a la CELAC, avanzar por el lado de la Alianza del Pacífico, que sería el equivalente que están tratando de armar los norteamericanos ahora del ALCA.
La derecha continental espera con gran expectativa el resultado del balotaje del próximo 22 de noviembre, ya que Argentina también es estratégica para su plan de terminar con la unidad latinoamericana.
Nosotros estamos enfrentando una derecha totalmente dependiente de Estados Unidos, en un periodo en que Estados Unidos quiere terminar con la unidad latinoamericana, quiere terminar con el CELAC, con el Mercosur, con la UNASUR, quiere volver a las viejas relaciones carnales o dependientes absolutas, y entonces eso es lo que tenemos nosotros por delante. En este momento preciso, históricamente estamos en un momento clave de nuestra historia, es decir, o nos vamos para adelante o empiezan a ir ellos por el efecto dominó.
A partir del 2003, Argentina ha dado un giro muy importante respecto a las relaciones con los países de la región. A lo largo de estos años, esas relaciones se profundizaron y se ha avanzado significativamente en la unidad latinoamericana. Camila Sánchez, Telesur, Buenos Aires.
El precandidato republicano a la presidencia de Estados Unidos, Donald Trump, anunció el miércoles que si llega a la Casa Blanca creará una fuerza de deportación para expulsar del país a unos 11 millones de migrantes indocumentados. Entrevistado por la cadena MSNBC, el multimillonario dijo que la expulsión sería humanitaria. Trump recordó que durante el gobierno de Ike Eisenhower se expulsó a 2 millones de migrantes, dijo, aunque la realidad es que un gran número de ciudadanos estadounidenses de origen mexicano también fueron deportados. Trump reiteró que de convertirse en presidente de Estados Unidos construiría un muro en la frontera con México.
En Los Ángeles, California, niños piden al presidente Obama que apele el reciente fallo de una corte que reafirma una decisión anterior de un juez, la cual congela la aplicación de órdenes ejecutivas encaminadas a resolver temporalmente la situación de millones de indocumentados a través de la llamada acción diferida. Escuchemos las voces de algunas mujeres que acompañaron a los niños durante la rueda de prensa del miércoles.
Lo que está ahorita en el centro es la tristeza que tenemos, la angustia que tenemos de que nos hayan dado la derrota a esta ley que estaba para aprobarse DACA, y pues nos apagaron una vela, pero no nos han apagado todos. La esperanza sigue, nosotros vamos a seguir luchando, y esta rueda de prensa o esta reunión que tenemos es para eso, para que ellos vean que aunque ellos nos quieren cerrar una ventana, nosotros seguimos tocando la puerta y nosotros seguimos luchando porque lo que nos merecemos, porque como personas personas, como seres humanos. Lo que venimos a hacer este país es a triunfar, a salir adelante y a hacer el trabajo que muchos de los que son de aquí no lo pueden hacer. Entonces, eso es lo que esa reunión, por eso las hacemos y por eso seguimos como indocumentados, orgullosos y de estar en este país, seguimos reuniéndonos para luchar por nuestros derechos. No estamos pidiendo nada que no se nos pueda dar, ni estamos pidiendo nada que no nos merezcamos.
Mi hija tiene 16 años. Tengo dos niños pequeños más. Tengo uno que tiene 9 años y una de 6 años. Yo no quisiera nada para mí, ¿verdad? Porque a mí lo que me interesan son mis niños. Que quiero que sean ellos los que se superen, los que salgan adelante. Nosotros no estamos aquí para venir a robar, ni somos terroristas. Somos gente luchadora que queremos, venimos a trabajar con el esfuerzo, con el sudor de nuestra frente, pues para echar adelante este país también y a la vez nosotros salir beneficiados.
Lo que yo quisiera es que hubiera paz y todos se pusieran de acuerdo para que hubiera una reforma migratoria y para que se acabara tanto racismo, porque yo digo que venimos a este país a luchar para un mejor futuro y no venimos a quitarle nada a nadie, no somos malas personas, solamente venimos para salir adelante porque en nuestro país no se da la misma oportunidad que tenemos aquí.
Gloria Salcedo es titular de la Hermandad Mexicana.
Estados Unidos siempre se ha mantenido de la esclavitud. Toda la riqueza que tiene es porque paga bajos salarios. Estuvo acostumbrada en la época de las 13 colonias a que toda la gente fuera esclava y tenerla como esclava y mantenerla como esclava. Las mujeres no tenían derecho a vivir con sus hijos. Los padres de familia fuertes, honrados, tenían que vivir separados de sus esposas porque los ponían en campos separados. Había golpes, había tortura. Había agresiones físicas con los esclavos, maltratos, mala comida. Ahora lo que está pasando en la vida actual, que ya no lo pueden hacer porque son muy nobles y tienen un corazón muy bueno, ahora están atacando a la gente migrante que viene a trabajar. Con estas mismas técnicas, nada más sin dar latigazos, pero nos dan latigazos emocionales, con las deportaciones, con la separación de las familias, con el sufrimiento de los niños y con el llanto de los hombres, que es lo, yo creo que más nos duele. Hombres fuertes, valerosos, que cuando se ven impotentes de siquiera no tener un permiso de trabajo, se ponen, no les queda otra más que sacarles un poco de lágrimas en sus ojos, ¿verdad? ¿Y qué estamos haciendo nosotros como sociedad, como comunidad? No nos estamos organizando, no estamos luchando como deberemos de luchar. No podemos parar, tenemos que luchar porque no nos quieren. No nos quieren como gente organizada, no nos quieren como gente pensante. Nos quieren como esclavos, trabajando día y noche, pagando impuestos y manteniéndolos a medio comer. Entonces es importante que ya salgamos de eso, que tengamos una valentía para levantarnos. Tenemos algo por qué luchar, algo muy bueno.
Era Gloria Salcedo, encargada de la organización Hermandad Mexicana en Los Ángeles. Yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Guatemala inicia el jueves la muestra de cine comunitario. Reportan los compañeros de la Federación Guatemalteca de Escuelas Radiofónicas, FEGER.
Y del 12 al 15 de noviembre se llevará a cabo la primera muestra de cine comunitario en nuestro país. En la misma participaron más de 34 jóvenes guatemaltecos y también jóvenes de otros países. Ingrid Jucub, organizadora, nos informa qué estará ofreciendo esta primera muestra de cine comunitario.
En esta se proyectarán 10 cortos en formato de ficción y documental producidos por 20 jóvenes cineastas comunitarios de El Salvador, Guatemala y Nicaragua. Las temáticas que abordan son la migración, el acceso a la educación, el uso de las redes sociales, relaciones sexuales en adolescentes, emprendimiento juvenil, alcoholismo, organización juvenil, cuidado del medio ambiente y memoria histórica.
Los jóvenes productores fueron parte de un proyecto de la Fundación para la Juventud en el que se buscaba que desde el arte aportaran para la construcción de las soluciones de los problemas que les aquejan, según Filedino Chamalé.
Socializar las obras audiovisuales de los jóvenes productores y sus conocimientos como protagonistas del desarrollo propio y su entorno, al mismo tiempo que genera un crecimiento individual y colectivo para la construcción de soluciones a las problemáticas que les afectan. Y pues el cine comunitario también es la búsqueda de una estética propia que aporte a la construcción del cine nacional.
El 12 de noviembre se realizará la inauguración en la ciudad capital, pero las producciones serán presentadas en los departamentos y en los diferentes municipios de donde son originarios los jóvenes productores, por ejemplo, en Santo Tomás, La Unión, Suchitepéquez, Lo de Carranza, San Juan, Zacatepeque, San Raimundo, Guatemala y finalmente en Playa Grande, Ixcán, Quiché.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica, un noticiero producido diariamente con el trabajo voluntario y digno de sus colaboradores. A nombre de Toshli, del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
This is Diane Patterson. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101freakradio.org.
I'm a jolly broadcaster. Welcome to Bathrob Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris, and you're tuned to 101.3 FM, freakradio.org, At last, not live show, but at least a new show. This is being created earlier in the day on November 12th. If you want to make comments on what you hear, give a call to 831-423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, which is also 423-4833, and I will incorporate your thoughts. I'll respond to you if you give me a number to call back or a place to meet you, and we can put that into the next show. As regular listeners know, shows happen twice weekly, Thursday evening 6 to 8, and Sunday mornings from 9:30 to 1, sometimes a little longer. So do listen in. Thank you for being faithful, or interested anyway. And remember, Free Radio Santa Cruz needs, well, we need a studio. And there's a $500 reward for getting us one 10x10 space anywhere with access to electricity and the internet. We can actually create our own lodge. We can create our own structure in your backyard. So give a call to 423-4833. And now, Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides.
We continue hearing some more of Julie Vinograd's latest from her book, Handle With Care, here at the Med. Go ahead, Julie.
What is Donald Trump? Of course, he's not just Donald Trump. He's the last Trump. There's a sense of recognition while we wait for him to take a battered old horn from a $1,000 suit, shout, "You're fired," at us, and then blow the world down. He whips the four horsemen over our heads, and everything he says came from our minds to him like coins to a wishing well. He's the last Trump. The graves will open, and all the dead will vote for him.
Better a strumpet than a trumpet. Of course, many of us are both.
This is the first poem in the book. Now, when I read it, you have to think of me as a tape recording. It's called Dear Death. Dear Death, no one is at home at the moment. Come right in, sit down in the black leather chair, make yourself comfortable. There's a pack of cigarettes and a pile of magazines from the dentist's waiting room. Dear Death, we will get back to you as soon as one of our operators is free after a tiny operation. Dear Death, we regret having missed your call and will return it to the lost and found office. Dear Death, listen to this soothing music and at the beat, leave a message. Dear Death, your call is important to us.
Indeed. Well, she got that going. Now she's checking out the book for a suitable poem.
Oh, this is silly, but I like it. It's called Full Moon. The moon is a bank vault where God keeps his spare change. It drives people wild watching all that money shine. I knew a man once who claimed he'd robbed the moon. That was the reason he was in jail, not the other charges. Yeah, he'd done that stuff, but who cared? It was the moon they got him on, even if they wouldn't admit it. He hadn't planned the robbery exactly, but he'd been drunk at the time, a scorching August night in the city. He climbed up to the roof to cool off, and somehow went on climbing. When he reached the full moon, he stumbled on heavy silver, pearls, moonstones, diamonds ground down to dust. He touched them to see if they were real, then he put them in his pocket. He didn't remember how he got home, but then he often didn't. But the cops knew. They busted him for something silly within the week. He said he'd hidden some of the money for when he got out, only a little, there was way too much to carry. And he'd split it with me if I brought him some more of those fine cigarettes.
And when I play that, I'll be actually able to hear it over the noise of the cafe. The miracle of audio recording. Got another one for us? This could be the last one, because I think we're going to try to scamper and get to the meeting.
Let's see.
And again, we're checking out to see what's possible here. They're for sale if you want one. Everybody is so human here. We're so responsive to each other. I love it. Go ahead.
Dancing time. Because of the attacks on a kosher grocery in France, all the baguettes in Paris are now circumcised. Every star wears a yarmulke because the night is holy. Because of the shooting by a synagogue in Copenhagen, maybe the moon wears a rabbi's chalice around herself and David's leading the prayers. Nothing must stop the prayers. Wind is the canter. Bullets are helpless against wind. Because it's Saturday night, the cops try to keep everyone off the streets, out of the clubs, in case of more shooters. Stay inside. Be quiet. The eternal Hasidim, Jews who worship by dancing, fill the streets down through the centuries. They can't be killed. They're already dead, and nobody dances like they do. Spinning, kicking, and waving handkerchiefs over their heads. Singing and dancing louder than God.
Name of the poem?
Yep, that's it. Oh, Dancing Time.
You want to try one more, or have you suffered enough? She's going to try one more.
Okay. Merry-go-round. In the merry-go-round, one of the horses catches fire. Firemen in belted jackets spray hoses over it, yelling instructions. But the child riding the horse only laughs, stretching the fire around him like wings. In the merry-go-round, one of the horses is bombed by rockets, most just missing, and digging huge, screaming craters right outside. But the child riding the horse only slips underneath, holding on by the painted belly, protected by the raised prancing hooves. In the merry-go-round, poles holding up the tent at its center look like sculptures of women till one of them smiles. They are mothers who brought their children here because the lives of the circus are safer than flags. One of the mothers knits a shirt for her son out of cotton candy. How can there be music if there's war? How can there be war if there's music?
Another one of those quandaries at the end of your poem, eh?
Yeah, I think that's it for the moment.
Thank you, Julia.
Is it enough for you?
Not really, but I gotta go, so we'll let it go at that.
Okay.
I'll contact you by phone if you want to.
You can absolutely call me, and I will read you more, and even some, that aren't in the book.
How can folks purchase your latest book?
What?
How can people get your book?
Write to me, 1630 University Avenue, number 34, Berkeley, California, 94703. And my name is Julia Vinograd, and the book goes for $5, and you've got to include an extra dollar for mailing.
Now you're willing.
And the title is Handle with Care.
Fair enough. Thank you, Julia.
Okay, thank you.
And that was Julia. And my apologies for the quality of the recording. And for most of this broadcast, it's going to be makeshift. I'm hoping it improves. I'm still learning how to do more sophisticated and direct without microphone in front of the speaker type recording, which produces not the best recording. You are tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, Freak Radio. This is not a live show, but you can call in and leave a thought about it or a reaction or a wish or a tip on how to get for us to get a studio and you to get $500, which we're looking for, at 423-4833. We're looking for a place anywhere, generally in the Santa Cruz area, Santa Cruz City area, and we would really love to have a studio back again. Anyway, boy, I'm beginning to sound like a KPFA fundraiser or something, but anyway, the next thing that I've got for you, I think we're going to do a little musical break, and then I'll be back with some street interviews, which I've really missed giving because they've been piling up, and now finally we'll be able to put some on the air, and that's good.
You are not my brother, you're nothing alike. You're riding my hover, you're riding your bike. If I were in your shoes, I know what I'd see. If I were in your shoes, I'd wanna be me. It's the song, it's the song.
It's amazing what big piles of money can do. I encounter agreement whatever I say, and if they try to tax me, I faint dead away. It's the song, it's the song, it's the song of the wealthy man, always right, never wrong. Try to be just like me if you can. It's the song of the wealthy man. Raise a glass to the rich, 'cause they're better than you. Better shod, dressed, connected, and well insured too. Money may not buy love, as the songs always say, but it buys politicians, and they're here to stay. It's the song, it's the song, it's the song of the wealthy man. Always right, never wrong. Try to be just like me if you can. It's the song of the wealthy man.
And that's a song by Carol Denny from her album, Unless, of Course, You Die, and the name of the piece is The Song of the Wealthy Man. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, or you're listening online at freakradio.org, and you can call in, not live, but to give any reaction, which I may then pass on at the next show. If you want actually to have your own commentary passed on, it has to be brief. My answering machine is short, but if you leave a phone number and you want to talk about anything further at greater length, I'll try and get back to you. And also, if you have any reports about misconduct on the streets or indoors around abuse of poor people, or just abuse of folks generally, I'm interested, particularly, of course, around unhoused or homeless folks and how they're treated. So let's go back now to the front of the courthouse about a week or two ago, when the Blue Box 2, that's Keith McHenry and Abby Samuels, were facing a hearing for allegedly vandalizing the sidewalk. And the specific action in question had to do with the kind of blue wedge marks, the little sort of, I guess they're dots now, or no, I guess they're little sort of, how would you describe them? They outline boxes on the sidewalk, which the city council has decided are the only permissible places for people to perform, vend, table, or engage in free speech activities that involve what they have termed a display device, which isn't a sign, it's a table or a cap or a guitar case or anything, quote, capable of holding tangible things. It's their way of essentially giving the merchants a veto power or strong controlling pressure on what should be the public sidewalks downtown and other business districts as well, and I think around the waterfront as well, the beach area. And this is, of course, something I've opposed for years and fought against and written against and spoke against. And more recently, they have tried to scrunch the available space down to less than 2% of the sidewalk. A proposal by Don Lane and Pamela Comstock to double the minuscule size of performance space and all these other activities. In 2014, had Julie Hendy and her little band of box drawers creating these, what I call performance pens, up and down the sidewalk. And at some point they decided to make these less, to eliminate numbers of them. I think there were some 60-odd performance pens, and then up and way up and down the sidewalk. That sounds like a lot, but in terms of the huge, broad sidewalks of these downtown Pacific Avenue,
it amounts, as I said, to about, I think, less than 2% of the space there, if you consider all the rest of the space. Now, much of it is now taken up with other things that have been put in by the city or leased to private merchants. But in any case, sometime last summer, the masters decided that they wanted to have less space for performance, so they eliminated numerous boxes, areas, where people could perform. Some performers wouldn't accept this. Joff and Alex, for instance, they're artists. They said, we have a right to be here First Amendment-wise. We're not blocking anything. We're not, we are allowed to display our, and even to sell, our artwork. That's First Amendment protected in public spaces, and it is by the courts. And nonetheless, the city has tried to ignore that issue, and often to its chagrin. So, for instance, back 15 years ago, Mike True, a guitarist, and was trying to display his CDs. I think it was even for donation for sale. And the much late lamented Sergeant Butchie Baker, who has become the big hero for having been shot down in an ill-advised interaction with a guy with a gun, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, and became the cause celebre for the right wing, along with Elizabeth Butler. He was quite a nasty and abusive police officer to most homeless people, or many homeless people, and to a lot of activists. And he earned the city, I think it was a $15,000 or $25,000 civil lawsuit by falsely arresting True and stealing his property. Confiscating it, I think, is the word. But in any case, the city found it can't do that. And so, but it's still trying to try to do that, and finally it arrested Alex and Joff. And they took him to court. And in a strange decision, which I found remarkable but positive, Commissioner Kim Basket, who I call Basket Case Basket, or Basement Level Basket, and it's a term of opprobrium, it's a term of criticism, it's a term of lampooning and satire for very good reason. She's generally a fundraiser for the authorities who ignores the rights of the poor, and also particularly hostile to activists who are trying to assert those rights. But she did found them not guilty, although I don't think she threw out the law under which they were supposedly being arrested. And they're back there doing their thing, and they're not doing it inside these boxes. Well, the thing about the Blue Box 2, Keith and Abby, is they were accused of, and I think Keith has, he may have even acknowledged doing it, because I think it was done quite openly on video, restoring boxes by creating little blue marks. The boxes are in blue. And they aren't, you know, we're not talking about big, sweeping, really visible marks on the sidewalk. They're sort of tiny dots or little corner marks, sort of delineating a space of, I think it's 2 by 3 feet in area. And he was arrested. He was jailed first. They were charged with felony conspiracy, and then they dropped the charges to misdemeanor vandalism. And this was a hearing that they had. Oh gosh, I guess it was either at the end of last month or the beginning of this month. And the two of them have gone out of town for a month. They're traveling, and they're going to be back in December for another hearing on the issue. But a lot of us showed up, or actually not so many of us showed up, but a number of us showed up at the hearing. And I think there was a class watching the hearing in court. I think it was the courtroom of Judge Paul Burdick of Santa Cruz 11 fame. A lot of people think he's a big supporter of civil rights based on the fact that after a year he dismissed the charges against five of us who, and then sometime before he dismissed the charges against two of the 11. And finally he accepted a coerced plea for the remaining four, the final four. These are the people who were occupying the River Street vacant Wells Fargo bank building that's still vacant after, God knows, what is it, 5, 6 years? I'm not sure. Anyway, they were in Burdick's court, and here's some interviews outside the court. Some of which have to do with the Blue Box 2, some of which just have to do with experiences people have had in the courts that aren't so much fun. So listen in, and or let's both listen in. Or I've actually heard him. You get to hear him now.
Well, I'm out here at the rather meager Food Not Bombs. Well, it's not meager. There are two tables here. There's a literature table. There's a tree is hanging in with oatmeal and coffee and other comestibles. And David Silva is distributing flyers. And here comes another person to victimize David right up the road behind you, if you wish. And today is a trial, or I should say a pre-trial for the Blue Box 2. Who, Keith McHenry, are the Blue Box 2, and why should we care?
Oh, it's me, Keith McHenry, and Abby Samuels. And
Abby snuck into the courtroom, gently avoiding us, but she's in there as well.
Yeah, she'd be in there. She's happy people are supporting her here.
Not happy enough to say hello, but happy anyway.
Yeah, that's really good.
Right. So, tell us about the Blue Box 2.
Back in August of 2015, there was a stepped-up effort to drive the artists off of Pacific Ave.
August 2014, I think.
Well, no, I'm talking about, well, I mean, there was a...
Oh, right, you are talking.
Yeah, right. Sure. So then, so people were getting ticketed for being out there. That had actually happened, like you say, actually did start, like, even a year before, but it got worse and worse. And then some people were ticketed. And we're putting up resistance. And what had happened was...
What were they ticketed for?
For not being within the Blue Box. And so what happened...
What is the Blue Box?
So the cities across America have set up this system on the high... In the
free oatmeal, grab it if you want.
In the pedestrian areas. Where they... performers and vendors have to stand in a Blue Box. And in Santa Cruz, it's on Pacific Avenue, and you have to be there only 1 hour, and you have to move. And so... there was originally 61.
There aren't too many of those boxes.
Well, there were 61 boxes originally voted on by city council, and there was actually public comment about it and stuff, and then they were supposed to put it out. I never counted the 61 boxes, so I don't know if they really existed, but they were said to have existed. And then 6 months later, consent calendar vote where there was no debate about it, they removed half of them. And so in August of 2015, after we did Food Not Bombs, I went and returned the 33 boxes that were removed.
Are you confessing here on audio to the world your vandalistic behavior?
I don't believe it is vandalism. So this is what I'm proposing to the city, that I will not charge them for my time and materials if they return the bail money and dropped all the charges. That's right. My first offer.
So you're not insisting when they abandon the whole Blue Box.
Of course, that they return all, that they either have no Blue Boxes and people. The best thing is no Blue Boxes. People perform as they had for since I was first performing here. Well, first painting here on Pacific Ave in the 70s, and that that they abolish that law, that they. In fact, encourage people to perform on the streets, that they I won't charge them any money for my effort, so
that's noble of you.
Drop the charges, get rid of the law.
A civil lawsuit to suing the city for massive amounts of damages.
If they don't cooperate in the plea bargain, then I might have to do that.
Now, you were held in jail?
I was. We were arrested for felony conspiracy to commit a crime and felony vandalism for replacing the Blue Boxes. Yeah.
So you were an accused felon, but then mysteriously the felony charges disappeared?
Yeah, then the felony charges became misdemeanors. They did run like a Sentinel article and a couple of other articles. They never did interview any of the defendants. Or contact the defendants.
I'm not suggesting the Sentinel is biased in favor of repressive authority.
Might be the case. Seems like they were doing stuff like that. So, crazy.
We've been talking with
Keith McHenry, co-founder of Food Not Bombs.
Thank you, Keith.
the police broke down the windows and dragged them out of the glass of the car to arrest them in the first place.
So, for Free Radio Santa Cruz, why are you here in court today? If you want to say.
Can you pause it for 1 second?
Sure, I'll pause it. So we're talking with...
Amy Malone.
And with...
Michelle, her mother.
And Amy, tell us your story, why you're here in court today and how it all happened.
So back in March, there was a legal search of my home
where my husband was charged on some trumped up charges. And
what charges?
It was possession of basically fireworks. And
he is a firework criminal. I see. It has a sparkle to it.
And that day his name was slandered all over the news, all over the newspapers.
His name was?
Michael Malloy.
And what happened then?
Well, he was released that day, that night. And then 4 days later, CPS was at my house.
Child Protective Services, mm-hmm. protecting the children in your house? No.
No.
What did they do? How many children do you have?
Three.
And what happened then?
They were trying to basically take them, and I said, no, you're not, you know. And we went to court, and we were fighting that for 4 months. I'm going to go back a little bit because 4 days later, CPS showed up. A day later, got paper in the mail that I was terminated from my Section 8 housing. Day later, I got a notice from my landlords that I was evicted.
And what was your reaction to this? What did you do having learned this information?
It's traumatizing.
Did you fight back in any way, or were you simply, did you decide to move?
No, I tried to fight back. I tried to fight back.
How did that go?
The more I fought back, the more they harassed me. The more my husband got stopped by the police, got strip searched in the street. Just the constant harassment.
What police jurisdiction did this?
First it was Scotts Valley Police Department. And then later it was the sheriff.
Where were you living? Did you immediately move out, or were you still in your own home fighting the eviction?
We were living in Scotts Valley, and we were fighting the eviction.
Were you successful?
No.
And when were you evicted after that?
August? I think it was August, the beginning of August.
4 months later or so?
Yeah.
Yeah. We started learning as much as we could to protect our rights and find out what our rights were and what we could do. And the more we tried to exercise our rights, the more resistance we got.
And then what happened?
So 4 months later in family courts, which the family courts are very corrupt court system out there in Watsonville. They are running a Kids for Cash scam. My husband and I have been studying the laws and you know, our constitutional rights. And we basically dismissed our case, which the judge denied. She did not like it. And there was retaliation. The sheriff came to my mother's home.
Before you tell me that, the case was dismissed and then the sheriff came?
We dismissed our case.
Meaning?
She should have approved the dismissal.
So you asked that the case be dismissed and she denied it?
Yes.
Okay. And then you said the sheriffs came to your home?
Sheriffs came to my mother's home with no warrants, came in, broke my arm, and arrested me for child abduction of my own children.
And the name of the man or woman who broke your arm?
The sheriff's name was Michelle. I do not know her last name at this time.
And when did that happen?
July 15th.
Were you a witness to this, Mom?
No, when they came into my home, I had stepped out to go to 7-Eleven to get coffee. And when I came back, that had happened.
And what did you see when you returned?
I saw all three of my kids in handcuffs, and along with everybody on the property where I live. And just everybody was being questioned.
How many police officers or sheriff's deputies were?
Gosh, a lot. At least probably 10.
And what did they do to you when you walked in?
They thought I was somebody else, and they tried to put handcuffs on me, but then I explained that that wasn't me. And nothing. And then they were just kind of wrapping things up and leaving when that happened, and you were freed?
I was freed at that time. They They ended up leaving and coming back 15 minutes later, saying that there was a protective custody warrant out for my children, okay?
They didn't take the children on the first sweep?
No, they didn't. They came back, and they said that they wanted to look at my arm. It was their policy, so they kind of tricked me, you know, tricked me out of the house, and then, you know, arrested me and took the children. What, they were with you for a few hours, and then...
With me, they wouldn't let me go to the bathroom. They wouldn't let me go, you know, in my house by myself.
They being...
Two police, it was Michelle and
Sheriff.
The sheriffs, yeah, and another guy. And when they started asking me questions and that I wouldn't answer, they said that I couldn't use the restroom. I wasn't cooperating because I didn't want to answer their questions.
You told them you would pee on them if this kicked up?
No, I just wanted to try and keep my grandkids without them taking them, but then they ended up taking them.
Is that currently the situation? Are the grandkids being held? And
Yes. They're being held. The baby's being severely abused. Every time we see him, he's got new marks, bruises. He's got severe diaper rash. He's very, like, traumatized, almost.
Think of it, like, what do you call
unresponsive.
It? Unresponsive, yeah. And they put my granddaughter in a homeless shelter. They put my grandson in a level 10 group home. My granddaughter has ran away twice and tried to come back home, and they've taken her again now.
This is Becky Johnson, who also has written about CPS. These two have had their children stolen by CPS and the sheriffs. I suggest you exchange information. I'll suggest you keep a blog and start publishing, you know, events for community consumption of what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, but again, you know, as you know, this makes you subject to more harassment, so that's always an issue.
I'm aware of that, and once you understand your rights and the laws and what's really going on in the courts, there's no going back. Once you're awake to this, you can't go back to sleep.
Particularly if you're homeless and trying to sleep outside where it's illegal to sleep, but that's another story.
She can't even get the keys to get into her motorhome. They've taken her ID, her money, her phone, her key, everything. They took her dog because we left it with food and water for 10 hours alone, and they came and took the dog. It broke. I just broke it. Sorry. So that's what we're trying. We're down here for her husband's court date. He's in custody, and to try and get her.
What is he charged with?
The firework stuff.
And what is the actual specific charge, you know?
Possession of an explosive device.
So he's actually a terrorist. Fireworks terrorist.
No, he's not. Equivalent, these were the equivalent to fireworks. Then, and on top of that, we didn't even know that we were in possession of them.
What were these items?
I don't know. Like, I didn't even see them.
Well, we've been talking with
Amy
and
Michelle.
And if folks want to get in touch with you to learn more, do you want to give out any information about how you can be reached or an email?
My email is Malloy, MallloyAm1 at gmail.com.
And say it one more time.
MallloyAm1 at gmail.com.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Should be on free radio if we... If my technical skills improve, we are looking for a studio, and I'm trying to find ways to do it even when we're not in the studio.
And that interview was, I think, done on November 5th. So that was last Thursday, in front of the courthouse. Anyone interested in getting in touch with her, again, can do so at Malloy... AM1 at gmail.com. I rarely follow up on these cases myself. I regard my role as kind of being to get the initial word out there, and if other people are interested, I hope they jump on board. I'm just sort of more of a transmission belt than anything else. And, you know, you are listening to people who are giving their side of the story. I didn't interview the deputies, the Scotts Valley Police, or check the court records or get to any of the court hearings. So you are hearing the perspective from people who are feeling abused and ripped off and violated. And frankly, I tend to be sympathetic with that, even though I can't say in terms of any firsthand awareness or having done research on the other side that they're giving a true and accurate account. You have to make your own judgments, and you can do your own research if you want to get in touch with these folks. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. This is the first, not quite live, but new broadcast of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norse, struggling with a number of frogs in my throat bouncing up and down. And let's have a musical break again. Compliments of Carol Denny, who does some great stuff. She's an activist up in Berkeley who's doing some good work fighting the anti-poor laws up there, which, by the way, are coming up on Tuesday at the Berkeley City Council. That's Tuesday, the 17th of November, in the, I think it's the evening session. There's also going to be a sleepout up there on the 16th, which people are invited to join in front of the Berkeley City Hall, City Council area. I guess you'd have to sort of ask around once you get up there if you are going up to be a part of that sleepout. I encourage people to do that. There may be some folks coming from HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, going up there. I'm not sure. I'm not likely to do it because there's also our 19th Freedom Sleeper sleepout coming up the next day, the 17th, and then the HUF meeting on the 18th, which... too much stuff trying to do, plus a radio show the next day. I'm trying to do these radio shows twice a week from home, which is probably too ambitious, but we'll see how it goes. Anyway, let's get musical from Carol Denny, and I'll be back. Call in to 423-4833 and leave a message if you have any thoughts or wish to yourself be on the air, if you have stuff you think the community needs to know about. This is an avenue for you to use, 423-4833.
Just had a chat with the devil. Guess where he's be spending his day. So let's drink a glass to our bosses. Long life and good luck and good health. And apologies for their misfortune. We're taking back all of our wealth. We're taking back all of our wealth. We're taking back all of our wealth. Apologies for their misfortune. We're taking back all of our wealth.
And that was Carol Denny with another fine song. Michael Deal is an activist up in Berkeley who's a rather kind of charming and rather eccentric-looking figure. He wears a black top hat and is usually unshaven and jolly. Recently has been a long-time employee of the Berkeley Outreach Support Services, which called BOSS. It actually has another name now with the same acronym. And he was recently laid off, and they're refusing to rehire him. He's one of the people who was attending the meeting fighting the new anti-homeless laws coming up in Berkeley on the 17th at their city council meeting, being protested at the 16th at the sleepout. And there'll be speakers, I think, at the sleepout and at the Berkeley City Council meeting. Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and the Freedom Sleepers may be sending people up there to show support from Santa Cruz. We're kind of hoping that people from both cities can be supportive of protests in the other cities. But Deal, Michael Deal, is a guy I ran into when I was up there last week, sort of attending this powwow of the activists. And let's hear what he has to say. This is an interview from a few days ago.
Here in front of the Neighborhood Justice Clinic in Berkeley on Shattuck, which is one of a series of decrepit, run-down buildings. Look like they're just this side of demolition and red-tagging. Homeless Action Center, the Info Shop. Yeah. What are you doing here, sir, and what is your name?
Well, I just happened to run into Sally Hinman, who let me know about this meeting. Otherwise, I wouldn't have known.
This meeting being what?
It's safe as... I forget what the initials stand for, but it's basically the, you know, the more established resistance to...
Free talk for everyone?
Yeah. Which is, they do good stuff. We need them to do that, but I always want to make sure the people on the streets, at least, so we're all working together, basically.
Good luck on that. Now, here's a man with the black top hat, the dirty sweater, and the unemployment certification.
Well, hopefully tomorrow I'll get certified for unemployment. Otherwise, I'm going to be probably getting dirtier and scuzzier.
What is your name, sir?
I'm Michael Deal.
And Michael, for how many years were you employed by BOSS or a similar organization? BOSS being, what, previously Berkeley Outreach Support Services?
Yeah, I worked for them for 14 years.
And then suddenly you were unceremoniously terminated?
Yeah, I was in the hospital for a physical ailment, and they proceeded to hire my replacement, and it took me a little while to figure out what was going on. They wanted me to go, when they kept pushing permanent mental disability, it says, well, it doesn't sound like you're giving me my job back.
They claim you have a permanent physical or mental disability?
Well, they're claiming a mental disability, even though it was a physical disability that put me in the hospital.
They think you're crazy as a loon and twice as nasty.
Yeah, probably.
And we just came out of a meeting by the SAFE organization in order to fight anti-homeless laws coming up in a week at the Berkeley City Council. And you have been apparently one of the few distributing flyers on the street about that?
As far as I know, I'm the only one doing it at this point. Because I just generally, like I see a need to mobilize, I like to do it with a flyer, hand it out to people so they have the information there.
What exactly are these changes going to do if they're passed?
Well, I'm hoping there's more information on the thing I just got. I'm assuming it's, you know, I mean, trying to get the information, like what exactly you're talking about this time. Is it a little two-foot square thing you're supposed to put all your stuff in, which is totally ridiculous? I'm sure some of it is about
that the only space you're allowed on the sidewalk?
Yeah, which is totally ridiculous. If, you know, if you bring your sleep gear with you and other important survival things.
Who needs a coat in the winter? Come on.
Apparently, if you've got a house, it's not a problem.
There you are. See, so what's your problem? I mean, get a house.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to hang on to mine.
Get a job, get a house, and get along.
Yeah, I got a job, and I'm trying to... that's why my housing situation is very unstable. So I'm definitely feeling closer to the streets.
So there's this two-foot square deal. Is there anything else coming up?
Well, there's stuff, I'm sure, about the, you know, the bathroom, going to the bathroom. I mean, they'll give you a littering ticket already, so, but they want to have it official, like, you officially are illegally defecating, urinating, and they say, well, we'll have to provide bathrooms. Well, we've heard that one before. I mean, trying to, you know, if you're outside, you realize how hard it is to go to the bathroom.
Does Berkeley have 24-hour bathrooms?
No, they do not.
How many people live in Berkeley?
I think it's about 105,000.
And do we have any estimates of how much is spent by the city to clean up human feces and deal with the residue of human urine?
Well, I imagine it's fairly significant. I think they could come up with... I think it would be cheaper to provide the bathrooms, frankly.
But we don't have a figure for that.
I'm sure there's a figure floating around, and I've probably seen it in the past, but...
I mean, I've never seen a figure in any community for that, but I think it's an important figure.
Well, it's probably buried in the public works budget, because they're the ones that do it.
And you're the one to root it out there, man.
Well, they take people's stuff all the time. They're supposed to hold on to it, you know, but we know that a lot of times they don't, or if you go down there, your stuff has been already... Because, you know, they don't guard it very well, so other people pick out your best stuff, so a lot of people are like, well, it's just gone once they take it. So, you know, for a while they were trying to take people's dogs. I mean, that's why I still go out, because I still don't believe in justice.
So you have a sort of a small, kind of a mini shopping cart, and which is an ironing board and a Trader Joe's recyclable bag with, I don't know, it looks like flyers and other paper implements, clipboards.
Yeah, I do a certain amount of petition gathering. And, you know, sell buttons, little things, just not really enough to pay my rent, but at least, you know, a certain amount of survival.
You're currently indoors.
Still am, but it's been pretty, unfortunately, I'm getting a lot of community support. I've been, you know, we had a benefit at Gilman Street, which I used to run, where people came out and support. So people are aware, you know, I'm pretty well known in this town. So there are enough people, like, which is good, because without that, I'd be on the streets already.
Well, I'm running out of steam. Probably not entirely out of questions, but how can people get more information about the career, history, and ideology of Michael Diehl?
The best thing is send me an email, adversary359@yahoo.com. Hopefully there'll be an article in the Street of Spirit where I'll talk more about what... Well, of course, we didn't know about that they were going to come back with the anti-homeless laws, but... Street Spirit is a good way to stay in touch with what's going on.
And that is online at thestreetspirit.org if you happen to be an online kind of person. Thank you, Michael. Anything else?
I just wish they'd stop doing this. 20 years of fighting these damn laws, and we've been successful at stopping these laws, but the harassment continues. They never give up either. So we don't give up.
Thank you.
And now we turn to the last city council, whom I sometimes impishly or annoyedly, I call it the shitty council, because of its failure to address pressing homeless needs in the winter, to restore basic civil liberties to people year-round, and to address broader needs in the community like the soaring rents, real estate profiteering, lack of a minimum wage that, or a living wage in Santa Cruz, or even an increased minimum wage that the city council refused to put on the ballot some years ago. So, this city council meeting that just happened, and that was, gosh, only 2 days ago,
They had three items on the agenda that I noted when, for those of you who go online and look at Santa Cruz Indie Media, which is a website I often post on, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, you'll find, along with the announcement of Freedom Sleeper Sleep Out number 18, which we had two nights ago, a description of the city council meeting that I was the only Freedom Sleeper there to speak at the oral communications period. There may have been some activists there earlier in the afternoon. I watched some of the city council's afternoon session. The three items that interested me were item 16, which was, 16, 17, and 18. 16 had to do with HUD, Housing and Urban Development Funding, for some city council project. And I wasn't particularly concerned with the specifics of that project. I was more concerned that city council members, particularly those supposedly sympathetic to homeless civil rights, and the entire city council as well, address the new HUD claims that they are going to be judging cities on the amount of energy they put into ending the criminalization of the homeless. That is to say, laws to make it illegal for homeless people to sleep, sit, play music, peacefully ask for spare change, and so forth. And my composer and Don Lane, as far as I know, made no inquiries on that subject. This next item, item 17, was the Beach Flats Garden giveaway to the Seaside Company. And I know the Seaside Company owns the land. But the city, as was proposed by Carol Long in this week's Good Times, could be pressing either for eminent domain, which is a process by which the city can seize property for the greater public benefit, private property, or threatening the Seaside Company around zoning permits, around their upcoming projects, and they always have lots of projects, or at least I'm told they do. Instead, the city council, as expected, just said, well, you know, we're going to talk about this for the next 6 months and report back, and we would certainly be willing to, purchase the property if we could. We'll work on at least negotiating that. We'd like to see the gardeners get a lease. But the reality is that day after tomorrow, on Saturday, the November 13th, no, that's tomorrow's the 13th, the 14th, the property is going to be reportedly fenced off and plowed under. All the gardens are going to be eliminated, if I understand properly, in order to reset the situation for the Seaside Company, which is looking for two smaller plots and may lease out two-thirds of it at some point. Again, I'm not entirely clear, except that the proposal of almost all but one gardener, I think there are 25 of them, according to the counts in the newspaper, are being ignored, and the plea by the Beach Flats folks is being ignored. To keep the garden, to keep the green space there. However wretched the neighborhood in the eyes of some, I talked to one activist who said he felt it was best that community gardens be spread throughout the city and that Beach Flats people be given options elsewhere. But if they live there, they should have options there. In any case, that was item 17. The city council gave essentially no hope to the Beach Flats gardeners, and there wasn't very much militant opposition. I think I spoke on that issue then, but I don't have that on audio at the moment. I'm having trouble accessing the audio online of the city council. Supposedly, it's both broadcast live, if you go online to the website of the city council, and also you can review it in the archives. I've not been able to do that, and I'm going to look into why. That seems to be a problem. I've always been able to do it before. It could be a problem with my machine. I don't know. The 18th, item number 18 was the the bed and breakfast summer rentals for ADUs, which concerned demands of ADU, accessory dwelling unit property owners to be able to rent their property out in the summer, you know, the American right to make money. And I don't have a lot of sympathy for those folks, although, you know, some of them, you know, no doubt are in trouble, and they're trying to make money through those kind of rentals, and given the difficult market. But they're in so much better shape than folks who are poor, and even folks who are renting generally, that it's just disproportionate to be so concerned about them. The city council, instead of doing some kind of meaningful action around rent control or renter protection, is simply trying to limit the use of these ADUs for fancy, expensive summer rentals that will take them off the housing market during the summer, except I think previous ones are going to be grandfathered in or something. Again, I apologize for not being thoroughly on top of it, but the general gist of it, as far as I'm concerned, was a halfway measure at best, which I think passed. They got a 4-3 vote. Cynthia Matthews, Cynthia Chase, Micah Posner, and Don Lane voted for it. And then the three unregenerate right-wingers, David Terrazas, Pamela Comstock, and Rochelle Naroyan didn't. Anyway, that had happened in the afternoon. This is the oral communications period, and I'm going to play a few of the oral communications. I'm not going to play all of them. You can find them online if you can deal with their video, which I'm having trouble dealing with, but it is there. And they're supposed to also be providing audio, and I'm not sure if that's actually being done. So let's listen. Oral communications is a period where you talk about stuff that the council doesn't want to put on the agenda, and they kind of shoehorn this into a... it's supposed to be at 5 o'clock, but Lane has been typically moving it to the end of whatever agenda item is being discussed, which can delay it for at least 45 minutes, sometimes for 2 hours. I think there was a two-hour delay council meeting before this last one. It can happen at 5 o'clock, but in any case, it's supposed to be at a time certain so people can come and make comments, even though the city council will have nothing to do with putting items that maybe are significant, I think are significant, concerning the rights of the poor, concerning rights of renters, concerning the rights of people trying to fight wars and war profiteering through city council investments in the same. I've been trying to get the city council to disinvest and examine its investment portfolio for years, and it hasn't, as far as I know, or at least I haven't heard about it. Let's hear oral communications, or some of them, from November 10th.
Hello, I'm natealex.kennedy@gmail.com, and I've been a resident of Santa Cruz for over 25 years. With the recent restrictions on recreational vehicles, we really need to do something allowing RV owners to legally park somewhere in the city of Santa Cruz. Even for those who are wealthy and own a big RV, they may already own a $1 million home in Santa Cruz and may now be stuck with not even being able to park it in front of their own home.
This is Nate Kennedy, who speaks regularly at city council meetings. His views, in my mind, are sadly restricted and reformist, but he's heading in the right direction as far as I am concerned. His talk about RV restrictions is sort of a look ahead to what is likely to be on the agenda at the Santa Cruz November 24th city council meeting, which is to do with the Rochelle Naroyan endorsed severe restrictions, if not bans, on RVs, initially in the Lighthouse Field area, and then throughout the city. That's being pushed by Take Back Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Neighbors style, get rid of them, ugly or homeless van area. We don't want them in our neighborhood, that sort of thing. Right now, what they're proposing is for November 24th, although it's not clearly on the agenda. In Santa Cruz, you don't get to see the agenda until 4 days before Thursday evening, usually, is when I get to it. Or when it gets posted, maybe Thursday afternoon, before the Tuesday meeting. Tuesdays, the second and fourth Tuesdays are when city council meetings are regularly and appear generally. The proposal is to have the RV parking spaces severely limited in terms of oversized vehicles, not allowing an oversized vehicle to take up more than one parking space. And then limiting the size of the parking spaces and then requiring permits to even park an RV in the city of Santa Cruz, starting initially with the Lighthouse Field area. This could run afoul of the Coastal Commission's concerns about access to the coast. It obviously runs afoul of the needs of poor people who use their RVs as residences and have a right to be on the public spaces, and there's no place else they can go if they're poor. And this is something Nate is talking about. But he's, instead of opposing the restrictions, he is talking about some sort of, I don't know if it's a ghetto area or a number of areas where RVs will be allowed to park. But I feel that he'd probably be missing the point in terms of the idea of skewing the rights of public spaces to be essentially determined by people who want nice oceanside views from their home or are paranoid or apprehensive about strangers parked in the vehicles in front of their house. Let's hear some more.
We need to provide permits, even if they are expensive, that will allow a recreational vehicle owner to park their RV within at least a 1 or 2 block radius of their residence.
And I believe that's actually provided for us. I don't think Nate is... his concern is really in touch, but I'll have to see the proposal when it actually hits final form. It was passed out of the Transportation and Public Works Commission when Rochelle Naroyan was the chair there. She's now on the city council. So it looks like it could be a slam dunk once it hits the city council on November 24th. But the Commissioner for the Prevention of Violence Against Women has asked that there be safe places for women in vehicles and other vulnerable people in vehicles provided before that, or as an adjunct to that particular save us from the people in the RVs measure that is likely coming up on the 24th.
A big RV won't fit in their garage, a city garage, or even in their own driveway, which is most likely already in use with other vehicles. I'd suggest possibly even having a 24-hour limit to how long they can remain parked in the exact same spot, needing them to move their vehicle on a regular daily basis to prevent an RV owner from hogging one spot on their street, even if it is directly in front of their own home.
And there's never been a clear survey that I've seen that indicates actually how much space is taken up by RVs. There were some pictures and concerns about the Lighthouse Field area. But the notion of extending this citywide, which was being pushed by the rabid reactionaries in the audience, the NIMBYs who were, you know, Pamela Comstock's cheering crowd there, her peanut gallery. She's a council member who's far to the right and the co-founder of Take Back Santa Cruz, though not on all issues, on many issues, at least in terms of homeless and civil rights issues for poor people. That's what I've found. As well as her accessibility. I found her rather inaccessible. It's a mixed bag, actually, with her. I've commended her for having the courage of her rather reactionary convictions and not, you know, succumbing to the staff. So, for instance, an issue that some thought was on the agenda, 24-hour bathrooms, a report back on the pilot project, which was passed last summer. Supposedly it opened 2 bathrooms, but the staff, in my view, sabotage that, repeatedly fighting it, ignoring the council instructions. And then finally, when the council twice unanimously voted to fund 2 24-hour bathrooms, instead turned into a 1 24-hour bathroom pilot project. Now, after 3 months with essentially no problems there, or no problems more than during the day, according to the workers there. I had an interview with one worker, Matt, who was on the air talking about this a few shows back. Still, the staff is pushing to continue it as a pilot project. This was mentioned on an FYI, for your information, I guess it is, report, which you can find attached to the city council agenda, but it wasn't actually agendized, so it wasn't a part of any kind of public discussion, which is too bad. Micah Posner could have put it on the agenda or asked Lane to do so. He did not, even though this was one of his you know, supposedly big projects, hence the Posner, not the 24-hour bathrooms, but he actually set up a, through his initiative and that of people like Brent Adams and I think Pamela Comstock supported it, although I know she supported the 24-hour bathrooms. In fact, she kicked the staff in the ass for not for trying to sabotage the hours of the 24-hour bathrooms, but then she backed down in terms of having make sure the two were open. There is only one open currently. It is at the Soquel Street Garage across from New Leaf Market. They're supposed to be the Locust Garage was supposed to be open with its 24-hour bathroom and, you know, the peekaboo bathroom where you get to see the legs of the person inside. And it's pretty humiliating, I would say, really. I don't think it's an example of the dehumanization of poor people. And perhaps people in public generally who don't have the luxury of the private bathrooms or the customer bathrooms. There are three, I think there are two now, city visitor bathrooms, which I encourage people to know they can use once at the Cafe Gratitude, but they're only open during the day. And the other one is the Bookshop Coonerty, or more commonly known as the Bookshop Santa Cruz. If you're not banned from the bookstore, and even if you are, you have the right to go to the bathroom there, but you may have to face the wrath of one of the Coonerties who yells at you to leave, and you have to say, no, I'm going to the bathroom. It's a city-funded bathroom. You stop taking money from the city, and then you can kick me out, which is what I did the last time I was in there. It was almost a year ago. If you're trying to take a shit, you don't want to sit around arguing with the management about your rights or fearing the police are going to break down the doors of the bathroom while you take a dump, or you're going to get a lawsuit against you for trespass. But that's a sort of an aside. Anyway, the 24-hour bathroom issue can be found, if you want to read the staff report, by going to the city's website. You can't find it under the agenda. You have to kind of go back a screen to find it, you know, under the website right before you get to the city council agendas. And if people have problems doing that, I encourage them to contact the city at 420-5020, and they're supposed to advise you, I'm sure they will, on how to find those reports. And I'm glad they're putting those reports online. I think the squeaky wheel does get the grease here. My complaints have led to some reforms of a small sort around these issues. So, for instance, if you are interested in the people who are suing the city for, let's say, police violence or trip and fall hazards, they used to not provide the documents that people had filed about this on the agenda, even though the items were on the agenda, the actual city council voting on whether to accept a claim against the city or not. They routinely deny all claims. But after I complained repeatedly about this, they put the items into the agenda packet, though they have improperly removed the names or the contact information. So if you want to get in touch with the person who's filed a public document, you actually have to file a Public Records Act request to get the same document, which City Administrator Bren Lehrer, who I'm having some problems with, has cut out. And returning from that lengthy riff to back to the city council meeting and the freedom sleepout of two nights ago, I guess it's the 10th of November, and the oral communications period, which is supposed to happen at 5, but that day happened at 5:45, and now we're listening to Nate Kennedy, who ran for city council, or was going to. He didn't actually, I think, get past the filing stage, but he was interested, and he's taken a lot of public stands on issues relating to the right to chalk. You may have seen him downtown. I don't know if he's down there that much these days, but he used to make these small kind of pretty paper cranes he would give out to people. And he also was known for chalking on the sidewalk, and he was one of the first people arrested for chalking, along with James Ney and Becky Johnson and other activists who chalked with erasable chalk, either political or artistic messages on the sidewalk, and crackdown that started about 15 years ago. And I haven't heard anybody being arrested recently, although, as we heard before, the Blue Box 2, Keith McHenry and Abby Samuels, are facing, initially they were arrested, taken to jail in handcuffs, And I think that's more for their Food Now Bombs activism and their Freedom Sleeper activism. They were large in those movements and are still parts of those movements. I think Abby has taken a sabbatical or pulled back from the Freedom Sleepers. She's been doing a lot of hard work on Food Not Bombs. And Food Not Bombs continues to serve, by the way, for those who want to eat there, Saturdays and Sundays from 4 to 6 at the main post office. I encourage folks to go there, support Food Not Bombs, even if you don't eat there, and eat there even if you don't have the wherewithal to support it financially. There may be some Freedom Sleeper General Assembly activity there. That's been proposed by some of the Freedom Sleeper people. Freedom Sleepers does meet every Friday at the Cafe Pergolesi. We'll be meeting tomorrow at 11 o'clock there, in case you want to join or hear what's going on, be a part of that movement. Freedom Sleepers, of course, is the group that meets, that has for every Tuesday night for the last 18 nights, we're going on Freedom Sleep number 19 coming up on the 17th. Been in front of City Hall, sleeping there, and providing what amounts to a de facto now freezing, but still nominally unticketed area where people can have a safe place to sleep. Comment about the Freedom Sleeper situation. And I know I'm leaving poor Nate hanging, but we'll get back to him in a moment. For the first time, and you'll be hearing about this, there were no Klieg lights, these huge lights that were put up by the city to discourage activists from sleeping there and homeless people from sleeping there. There were no little red "don't park here" jackets to interfere with the folks wanting to provide support for the Freedom Sleepers. And also there was a cutback in the number of what I call the first alarm security thugs. And I don't say this to show disrespect to the individuals who are taking these, I don't know how low paid they are. They're, I think you get $20 an hour for this kind. The city pays $20 an hour. I don't know how much the actual, I shouldn't be finding out how much the actual first alarm security guards get. But they're thugs in the sense that they're there to deter political protest and to intimidate people who are homeless, who may have warrants for non-crime crimes or even crimes, from trying to get together to, in a sort of a survival mode at night or a political mode to protest the ordinances and practices of making poor people, driving them out of town if they're homeless and they can't afford to pay for places to sleep. And that means 1,500 to 2,000 homeless in Santa Cruz. That still is my figure, despite the supposed census figures. And it may be less, but the point is there's no shelter for the overwhelming majority of them. That's the point. Anyway, there seemed to be a less overt repression at this last sleepout, and the police never came and didn't even check for tickets at any point. People were sleeping not on the grass, because there was still these signs all over the place, "don't sleep on the grass," which seems to be an attempt by the city not just to drive away Freedom Sleepers and people that the Freedom Sleepers support, but to drive away homeless people during the day, because the signs are there then. Of course, they're calling it reforestation or revegetation or whatever, but and, you know, it did rain, you know, before, and maybe they're trying to protect the grass, but I've seen this tactic used numerous places at numerous times to essentially drive away congregations of people who use a public space. One saw it some years ago across from CVS, where the drum circle had been driven after it was driven out of the farmer's market, and they claimed that they're, you know, restocking the area after cutting down all the trees there. And then they put up yellow tape, but not much revegetation ever appears, at least not for many years. This, we're talking about 5 or 6 years ago. Let's get back to Nate Kennedy, lest we lose our way entirely, and see what's cooking there, or hear the rest of his statement about RVs.
We also need a few specific streets that are in industrial or commercial areas instead of residential, which would not only be legitimate for RVs to park, but also for truckers merely passing through town that need a legal place to park their rig while they get a few hours of sleep. These new restrictions on RVs are not only a war on the well-off poor, but it's also a war on the well-off rich, whom still need a place to park their RV, whether it was purchased for $10,000 or over $100,000. I feel the best solution for our city is to build a park with as large amount of space as possible, both for legitimate RV parking with power, water, and sewage hookups, and also dedicated campground space, allowing people to camp and pitch a tent in a dedicated legal area, and providing access to restrooms and showers, and perhaps even kitchen space people can use. No, I don't think any of this should be provided for free. Camping on the campground could be anything from $3 to $10 per day, and RV parking with utility hookups could range from $20 to $50 a day, depending on vehicle size. We may also...
And, of course, here again I dispute with him. You can't criminalize people who have no shelter and make them pay... you can, I guess, as provided you don't also make it illegal to use the public spaces as well, provided you're not littering, creating trash, or other toxic problems. And that has never been shown to be the case as a general situation. Although, you know, we have many screams and rants and raves about needles in the Poganip and needles here and there. And I even found a needle or two myself, you know, in the last 2 years. And that has to do with medical problems that this country, and particularly this great progressive city, refused to address other than through let's close our eyes and scream and get rid of the demonized people who are needle users or drug users. And I've talked about this. You have people saying, oh, yeah, no, I favor, the right to use marijuana or medically use marijuana, but let's not have a medical marijuana dispensary in our neighborhood. In fact, Greenway has closed down, as readers of the Sentinel know. The claim in the Sentinel that this was done because they aren't paying the rent is not according to one of the regular customers of the Greenway who's talked to the staff. What the staff is saying, is that the owner, the new owner, who also apparently owns the Santa Cruz Diner, according to my source, which I haven't checked, so check it out yourself, has decided he wants to close down, he or she wants to close down the Greenway area. He wants to close down the marijuana dispensary. And to do so, he purchased the property and then revoked the lease or refused to renew the lease. I don't have a lot of information. I put a call through to Lisa Milano, the Greenway owner, to see what her story is, but she's gotten a little less public in the years where she has been doing her business. I became a little cynical about her because she hasn't been particularly outspoken in defending the rights of people who are jailed for marijuana use, for example, in this area, the drug war kind of policies and that are continuing to fund rapacious and essentially unchecked and untransparent police agencies and sheriff's agencies. Anyway, let's get back to Nate Kennedy and hear what he has to say and others at the oral communication period of last city council meeting.
We may also need some restrictions, such as limiting people, RV or camping, from using these facilities for more than 3 weeks at a time, with a 1 week waiting period before they can come back, just to prevent the campground from getting overcrowded and to provide openings for new people possibly coming in for the first time.
In this attempt to start with all kinds of exclusionary and restrictive measures, I think is this completely the wrong approach. I mean, if you find problems developing, then you address them. But what you have now is a significantly higher death rate and assault rate against homeless people than the general population that's housed. You have a clear restriction, violation of basic human rights through sleeping, eliminating the right to sleep, through sleep deprivation, sleep torture ordinances really is what they are. Not that they're uniformly enforced, not that everybody who goes to sleep gets a ticket, but it is
puts people in a position of fear, the point being to claim that people can't be in different places here if they're poor, because the city wants to gentrify, or because a certain class of people wants to exclude, or that a certain agency, the police department, wants the power to ID check and pat down and interrogate people who are completely innocent, other than the fact that they're sleeping and they're poor outside. The idea that you want to restrict RV, the idea of an RV campground, the idea of a walk-in campground or a bunch of them, is not a bad idea. It's good. But the idea of you want to set up a lot of restrictions is to cast a phony smear over the poor people that are really the victims and not the villains, but they're being portrayed as villains so that their victim status can be ignored.
Also, this would prevent anyone from being able to claim the new RV campground as their residence. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're going to pause briefly, and I'll be right back.
I watched the breakup of my family. Left alone, there wasn't time for me. Fell for the first guy that came my way. Held on tight and we ran away. My baby came before I turned 18.
Shuffle the Deck, lyrics and music by Joe Wassel, and it's another song from Voice of the Homeless.
And that actually is a song which I picked up from something some years ago. I'm reviewing some of my old audio archives of Bathrob Spears Broadsides, and that's the name of the show you're listening to. Bathrob Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris, and this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, or the remains of Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. We are studioless. Our transmitter is in peril, too. That's another issue I won't even be talking about. Just reminding you that $500 is available for anyone who finds us a 10 by 10 space or thereabouts with electricity and internet access where we can have 24-hour access. It can be indoors. It can be out of doors. We can set up our own little structure if you want. It has to be in the Santa Cruz area, the Santa Cruz city area generally. It can be on the outskirts of the city. It's possible, too. And the number to call is 423-4833. That's my phone number. And I'll pass the word on to the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective. And we're also interested in having you join our collective. You will learn, hopefully, I'm kind of gradually learning how to make shows even without a studio. The shows aren't as good. They aren't as, for me anyway, because I'm just a beginner here. But they are going out to the community, and hopefully the community is in touch with us, although there is no direct phone line here. You have to call, leave a message, and I'll get back to you, or leave your own message, and I will broadcast it on free radio at the next show, assuming my stamina holds out. It's a little more difficult doing these shows for me. Perhaps it's simply the learning curve, or perhaps it's simply a different experience doing it in my room rather than in a studio, and doing it without really much interaction with the community. I think there's a way to set up a phone access that's been mentioned by more experienced radio broadcasters, and I may try to do that if I'm successful in this and my interest and energy hold out. So, on with the show. And we're going back to oral communications from two nights ago at City Council.
Mayor, City Council, my name is David Minchin Silva. I was native California, born in Torrey, California. Was raised traveling between Salinas North Central with the rice crop and the poker crop. The poker crop got us middle class, and I went to Guardian High School, very middle class, and was the Air Force, and came out of the Air Force, and had a film career in the film industry until about 83, after the AIDS plague struck us all down, and I ended up being an eligibility worker in Fresno and transferred to Santa Cruz very much on purpose because my family always visited Santa Cruz. I love Santa Cruz, and I love seeing this democracy, and I love seeing the freedom sleepers outside. You know, remember when I was in the Air Force when the freedom riders were marching in Birmingham, but it is something that we should not ignore. The mayor's letter that was a public letter about the homeless situation and what we need to do about it was pretty much right on. It's quite a bit what a lot of us have been saying, the feds have been saying, everybody's been saying. But you need to agendize it. You need to agendize it. If you're going to repeal the sleeping ban, unless you want the federal government to write it for you, you know, the repeal is going to happen one way or the other. So, you know, you need to agendize it, and you need to agendize it soon.
And the letter that David Silva is referring to is the... it's available if you go to thestreetspirit.org. It actually was published, most of it, in the November issue, the current issue of The Street Spirit, which you can get by checking out, as I mentioned before, the Sub Rosa, or some homeless people are selling it on the streets for a buck or whatever you want to give them. It's a way of, you know, getting in out of the cold, have a cup of coffee as temperature gets worse. Only for a very limited period of time. We know restaurants don't want to have these homeless folks hanging around in their restaurants. And, of course, there are no warming centers at the moment as people freeze their asses off at night, which is going to become a problem for freedom sleepers, which we'll be talking about tomorrow at 11 o'clock at the Café Pergolesi, if you're interested in the freedom sleeper movement. In any case, Don Lanes has called... In a sort of a letter that he posted on his Facebook page, he's the mayor of Santa Cruz, for a change in the sleeping ban law, the elimination of the sleeping and blanket ban sections, which is something that Huff has called for decades. And I've been accused by some fellow activists of not being gracious because I'm not jumping up and down about Lane's proposal. It's a good thing. I contacted Lane by email and told him I'm happy to work with him on this if he wants. He said, no, thank you. I told him that I would like to know when it's being agendized. The response to that is silence. So the problem with Lane and this kind of even concrete proposal, which activists like Carol Denny of Berkeley are very excited about and like the idea of, and are actually using to try to pressure Berkeley to stop its anti-homeless laws, saying, look, see, Santa Cruz mayor is, you know, enlightened and so forth. And if it can be used in that way, I'm all for it. And that's great. And I'm not quoting her exactly, by the way. But there, you know, there's some who are saying, Phil Posner, activist of Freedom Sleepers, was sort of chided some of us for Freedom Sleepers for not being very enthusiastic about what Lane had to say. And that's because he was also had no objection to the massive, well, very overt attacks on Freedom Sleepers that the city put up, the ongoing ticketing of people. Now, it has to be said that at the last Freedom Sleep, as mentioned before, number 18, two nights ago, the Klieg lights were gone. The no parking restrictions were gone. The security guards were reduced, and there was no police interrogation or ticketing of people, even those sleeping in the brick area. We'll see if this continues next week. I mean, Freedom Sleepers did make a proposal that if there was a drawdown or a stand down or a truce, not so much with the protesters, although that would be good, but with the homeless community, if they've stopped giving sleeping tickets, that would be seen as a positive move. Not rhetoric, not, oh, it's a good idea, oh, maybe we'll do it, oh, let's do it, if only somebody else will put it on the agenda, oh, if only somebody else will vote for it. But something concrete that is happening in the city, that would be seen as something that we could really give credit to the city council, the city manager, the police department, and the mayor for. That hasn't happened yet, as far as I know. Although it is, has been told to me that people sleeping outside the homeless lack of services center, and for some time, have not been ticketed at night. On the other hand, people elsewhere in the city have. So it's still not in any way shown, in any clear way, that the city is responding to the rather threatening reality, very threatening for homeless people, but even threatening to the city's policymakers and money spenders and politicos, that the Department of Justice is now at least explicitly, if not effectively, on the side that says arresting people, ticketing people, harassing people at night for sleeping is cruel and unusual punishment if you don't have shelters. And the city, Santa Cruz City, doesn't have shelters, and it's never going to have shelters, as most cities aren't. Well, I mean, who knows? You know, lightning could strike, I suppose, but that doesn't seem to be in the cards. And therefore, until that happens, you can't give people the police treatment if they're just trying to sleep at night and they're not doing anything else. So let's hear some more from David Silva. If you want to look at Don Lane's response, and actually my response to Don Lane, which I didn't really engage in a debate with him. I simply kind of wanted to really talking to other activists. It says, not so fast, folks. Don't get all excited about this. We'll see if it's something to be excited about. And some other activists really strongly disagree with me on that. They say, you're really, you know, sabotaging a diplomatic process. You're not giving the mayor credit where credit is due. It's just I've seen too much of Lane's history of criminalizing the homeless and voting for criminalization and not objecting to it. And, I could cite half a dozen examples, and I have on this show, ranging from his lack of objection to the destruction of the San Lorenzo campground after the Occupy movement was swept away and criminalized in 2011 in December, to his voting for one measure after another that makes it illegal, essentially it makes it a jailing offense to sleep outside if you aren't going to court to deal with tickets that you can't afford anyway, or try to wend your way through the homeless lack of services center's peculiar unresponsive process that will not give you documentation if you're on their waiting lists. Nowadays, supposedly, if you call the River Street Shelter, and I'll be giving that number out later in the show, and simply give your name and then call back every 3 days, you can go on a waiting list that won't put you inside, but that will supposedly provide, once the police have harassed you, waked you up, ticketed you outside, your ticket will eventually be dismissed by the city attorney if you're on that list. So it's a number worth calling, and I'll be getting back to that. But let's get back to David Silva at City Council and some more of that.
These people out here are the true patriots of America, the freedom sleepers out here. And thank you very much.
That's me clapping.
Mr. Mayor, council members, I'm Jim Weller. I have been sent here formally tonight by Peace United Church of Christ to deliver a letter. An epistle, I guess, that makes me an apostle. I'll just say that this letter is signed by our senior minister, David Drishaw Jones, by our associate minister, by me, and by 46 of my fellow church members, who I was able to round up in 20 minutes after church. If I'd had longer, it would have been 100 more. This is what the letter says. We write with gratitude and deep respect for your service to our city and its wide-ranging needs. Your commitments to civic life and your willingness to work through complex issues and problems are a blessing to us all. Today we write with a special concern for those among us without adequate housing or services. As a congregation, we have been involved for many years in efforts to care for and shelter homeless families and friends. This is a core value for us, acting in compassion for those without resources and safe places to live. We participate actively in the Association of Faith Communities and host the AFC's shelter one night a week at our church. We urgently wish to express our support for a number of measures. One, that the city direct city staff to identify a suitable facility or facilities to be used for up to 10 nights of warming center use this winter season at no charge, and that the city actively support the volunteer organization now working with the county and other agencies to create such a warming center.
And that would probably be Brent Adams' warming center project, which I think got two nights of warming center through private donations last winter, and he's been doing a lot of energetic organizing. I think he's been out of town for a number of weeks, working, months even. And that's a strong project of his, along with bathrooms, porta-potties, and the famous, so far ineffectual, but reasonable Sanctuary Village. At least some think it's reasonable. Some don't, from different sides, right and left, but it's an attempt. But why just for 10 days? I mean, you know, it's going to be cold pretty much throughout the winter. We've got El Nino coming up. And why only if private agencies are supportive? This is the sort of thing that Nate Kennedy, we earlier saw, trying to anticipate objections, trying to meet essentially fascistic minded people halfway to reassure them. It's like trying to reassure people that Jews are not a menace or something in Nazi Germany. I mean, you don't start there by kind of meeting them that way and saying, well, yes, they do have long noses and they are, you know, heavily represented in the entertainment. And there are many cases. If you don't begin with that kind of an argument, which grants some legitimacy to positions that have no legitimacy. Criminalization of poor people has no legitimacy at all. Criminalization of people who engage in crimes, not concocted crimes like sleeping and camping and being in a park after dark, which is what the majority of the homeless citations are for, one can have respect for police if you favor the policing system as it exists, which I don't really, but one can understand it has some legitimacy there, at least in the minds of many folks, but not for driving poor people away, a form of class warfare. It's So let's hear more from Jim Weller. I mean, you know, this the association, what is it, the Association of Federated Churches? I always get it wrong. I apologize to the AFC, whatever those initials stand for. You know, it's a nice, very token project that's trying to be more than token. They do serve. They're more than token for the 20 people a night they serve, 7 days a week. But compared to the hundreds and hundreds of people they don't, and the vast amount of facilities these churches have, and the fact that they could be weighing in against anti-homeless laws, which they aren't, although Jim Weller does. He's a sort of an exception as an individual. He shows up at these things, and good for him. But even his talk is kind of, you know, moderate, I'm the moderate guy. Seems to me to, well, I take a different point of view. In any case, let's hear some more of what Jim has to say at Oral Communications, of course, ignored by the Santa Cruz City Council.
That the city amend the current camping ordinance to remove references to sleep and sleeping and covering up with blankets.
And this is exactly what Lane proposes on his Facebook page, in which is mentioned, again, reprinted in the Street Spirit website, if you want to go there and read it. You know, it's a good start. It's really, it looks like, to me, as I said before, it's also nice as a dodge against federal lawsuits for cruel and unusual punishment against HUD fund cutoffs for criminalizing the homeless. But the one part of the camping ordinance it does not address is the right to put up a tent, let's say, to have protective camp stuff like keep you warm, like a stove. All this stuff is still remains illegal. And if you set up a campsite, which can be construed by the police as anything and everything, if you simply say you intend to remain there overnight, in other words, that would remain a crime under Lane's proposal. So Jim Weller is taking the what he hopes, I think, is the politically attractive position to Don Lane and to maybe some of the other council members who are nervous about federal legal intervention or even compassionate. I mean, this is the Christmas season. Thanksgiving is coming up. Let's be compassionate for a few months. At least let's appear to be compassionate. We don't want to look too bad. But it doesn't go to the heart of it. And the fact that it goes to some of it is not bad. I mean, it's good. I'm not going to oppose that. But it has to be clarified what's really being overlooked as well, which I will, of course, do.
That the city commit additional funds as needed and appropriate to ensure that the Homeless Services Center continue its work in 2016 and beyond.
And this is another sore point. The Homeless Service Center, or, you know, the prison out of prison that homeless people are now find themselves in out there. And you can't get in, of course, unless you have a so-called pathway to housing. It's become, you know, I don't want to say a scam, some would, but certainly limited by the idea of we're not going to let people in unless we can get federal funding or state funding for them. And also persuade bigots in the community that we're only going to serve a certain limited number of people. And the general original reason for the homeless to provide meals and shelter or some kind of potential shelter place to be during the day is all gone. Instead, you have this fenced-in area with a so-called, you know, prison-like security gate, guards roaming around, ID checks required, and then even worse, since the middle of the summer, no people allowed in except those who are in the programs, the specific, very limited programs of the Pauli transitional shelter is what it is, and, you know, the Page Smith Community House. River Street Shelter still claims to be an emergency shelter in a certain sense, and that it still maintains its waiting list. And I don't know, maybe Pauli will again have its waiting list. And the only significance for that is not that you're going to get anywhere by getting on the waiting list, but you will, according to current city law, if it's being followed, and we have never been able to really accurately assess that by getting, you know, dodges from the city attorney's office. Are they really dismissing tickets? How many tickets don't get dismissed? Will the homeless lack a services center give documentation that they are for those who aren't on their waiting list, that they were full that night. So there wasn't any shelter. This is something that Monica Martinez, who's moved up to another position as a poverty pimp extraordinaire with another agency. I always think of Ensemble or Entrench. It starts with E. Encounter, that ain't it. But she would always lie about this with a merry smile and say, oh, yes, we do that whenever you want. And then, of course, when people tried to do it, it wouldn't happen unless a bunch of us came together. And then they do it for that period of time, give people documentation they were on the list, and then they would stop doing it. It was really kind of cruel. And all they need to do is accept the proposal that was proposed by Ed Frye and other activists who initially got this waiting list law going in the first place. We didn't propose it. And Ed Frye and Kerbugger Chris and Linda LeMaster and all the folks who, Robert Facer, who were camped in front of the county building 5 years ago for 3 months, for 1 month the county building, 2 months in front of City Hall, their campground essentially prompted the city attorney to zip in with this new proposal, which passed through the city council like shit through a goose, even though if activists proposed it, it would never have been introduced on the agenda. But the activists did was they provided the very squeaky wheel that essentially required the city attorney to act. And that's my view. I don't have any evidence of this. He hasn't testified to that effect, but that's my speculation about it. But the other proposal that they had in those days, Ed Frye and I and Linda proposed to the board of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. I think Don Lane was either on the board or Catherine Byers. These are council members who are on the board, former council members, that they just have a police officer out there they have a staff member who can receive phone calls from the police department if they want to know if there's any space out there. So when a police officer encounters a homeless person and decides they want to give them a ticket for violating the camping ban or the sleeping ban, they simply call them and say, you got a space there for them. And if they don't, the cop says, okay, we're going to leave you alone because they get no business interfering with you unless you're violating some other laws, because it's cruel and unusual punishment to do it. It won't pass muster in court. There's a necessity defense that can be used if people know how to use it, of course. So, more from the City Council, and you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. This is a taped or audioed show being played later, and it's not live, but you can call 423-4833 and leave a comment if you'd like.
We recognize that these measures are just a beginning.
This is Jim Willer.
They represent only a first and immediate step in alleviating the suffering of homeless friends and citizens. But we believe that the moral imperative is clear: to act in compassion on behalf of those who suffer among us. Again, we thank you for your hard work on our behalf, and we look forward to working with you in the days and months ahead. Thank you very much.
All right. Members of the community, and this includes, of course, the City Council, I'm a member of HUF and the Freedom Sleepers. I'm speaking for myself. The reality is the Council has rejected community opinion on a number of important issues, and the community itself needs to act. We've heard about the sleeping ban being agendized. We've heard some proposals for warning centers. Sure. Where are they? Why aren't they on the agenda? Why aren't they being publicized by this council? The answer is, it isn't happening. The community is going to have to take action in the most direct possible way. Today, we witnessed council chatter and votes that ignored HUD requirements against criminalizing the poor, the most basic needs of the Beach Flats garden supporters, and as well as no action to restore civil rights outside this chamber for peaceful protesters and the homeless at night. Though I notice that the parking meters are now allowed to park there where we weren't previously allowed. I suppose that's a big victory. You know, I mean, it's a restoration of the status quo before. The community must act, though,
because obviously it's pointless to belabor, and I use the word advisedly, the ass-licking we saw of staff and Seaside Company by council members. This is nothing new. But the community showed up here 2 weeks ago in force, and now it has to show up where it really matters and make sure that justice and equity are done, whatever the excuses and apologies of politicians, bureaucrats, property owners, corporations.
Remember, it's our fault for being loud too, right, Don?
Eager to be a part of their colleagues' process, as we heard one council member say he was so eager to do. It's clear that the city council is in the grip of a staff serving an ideology that has no interest in the needs of tenants, students, Latinos, unhoused people, and workers. Yeah, it's nice to have ADUs, a small number of terms in a certain way. Where's rent control? Where's renter protection? These are real issues. This is whether, where's action to restore basic rights for people, basic survival needs. Strong direct action is what the community needs to organize around and initiate. Whether it's to stop the Seaside Company's latest land grab, or real estate owners and speculators pushing their own agenda and reducing available housing, we need community action. Apparently, the city prefers to retain laws that criminalize the poor outside, even if this means a cutoff of HUD funding or lawsuits by the Department of Justice. This seems to be the situation. What can we, the community, do? Organize ourselves to be sure that real community space is restored for those outside who need it. A harsh winter is coming, and organizing has to start now. The community must organize and act. When the needs and opinions of hundreds of beach flats and other community folks are ignored, it's time to strike the belly of the beast and go directly to the Seaside Company itself. It's nearby, it's visible. Will folks sit silently by when city police remove people from the garden on Saturday, when it gets bulldozed frequently thereafter, soon thereafter? The community must decide. Thank you.
And I got one person applauding. That was probably David Silva. There weren't many people from the Beach Flats group there. They'd all come and spoken earlier. And I think maybe they were kind of wised up to the fact that the council was not going to do anything other than what they had already said they're going to do, which essentially was accede to the Seaside Company's proposal and talk about how wonderfully reasonable it was and so forth and so on. In any case, at the same time as I was doing this, this is sort of a side note for those who've been following this show in the past. I was recording this on a device that I'm now using actually to create this program. It's a little iPod. The previous mayor and the current mayor have, and the current, the council has ruled it is against their rules for me to leave this device sitting up near the podium, even though